Blog Talk Radio.
Hey, what's up? This is Seth Green, and you are listening to Somewhere in Vegas with Mark, and I am so hot, I would desperately like a glass of water. Please, please, give me some water.
This is Cindy Preston, and I'm with Mark on Somewhere in Vegas.
Hi, this is Melissa Peterman from CMT's The Singing Bee and the television show Reba, and I have to tell you, I just have to get it off my chest, I love Somewhere in Vegas with Mark.
Hi there. This is Faith Roscoe from General Hospital. You're listening to Mark on Somewhere in Vegas. And you better watch out. We know how to find you if you're not listening.
Hi, this is Shannon Egan from Whippet, and I love Somewhere in Vegas with Mark.
Hey, this is Lee Allen Baker with Somewhere in Vegas, talking with Mark with a Q.
This is Courtney Cronin. You're listening to Somewhere in Vegas with your host, Mark, and I would make sure to listen every week because he's a sure bet.
Hey, this is the Money Man, Eddie Money. I got two tickets to Paradise, and it's, you know what? It's Somewhere in Vegas. And what happens in Vegas stays in Vegas.
Hi, this is Crystal Kale, and I love Somewhere in Vegas with Mark.
Hi, this is Terry Nunn from Berlin, and you're listening to Mark Somewhere in Vegas.
Hi, this is Miracle Laurie from Joss Whedon's Dollhouse. There are three flowers in a vase, and I'm listening to Somewhere in Vegas with Mark.
Hi, this is Erin Hill, and you are listening to Mark on Blog Talk Radio and Somewhere in Vegas. Mark is a great guy.
Hi, this is Sean Pulaski. I'm still trying to figure out Mark Pico's sexuality, but I know you're listening to Somewhere Live in Vegas.
Here you go, Mark. I'm sorry. I thought you were she. I'm sorry. Get out of the tent. Let's get out of here.
Hey, this is Lance and Anna from Free Radio. And Anna?
And you're listening to Somewhere in Vegas.
Yes.
My favorite.
You know, that's usually what happens with me. I go to Vegas and I get lost, and so I end up somewhere in Vegas.
Somewhere in Vegas.
But right. I just don't know where it is.
Not quite sure.
Yeah, word.
Get ready. It's going to be hot. It's in Vegas. Check out Mark. Be there or be square.
Welcome, everybody, to Somewhere in Vegas here on blogtalkradio.com. I'm Mark the Q. I'm your host. Just one guest today, but she's a really, really special guest. She has done a lot in terms of it. She's a double threat, triple threat, quadruple threat, have you seen it. Her new music video is currently out for I Need That, which the single's already out already. And she produces, writes, directs the series Loyalty as well. And there's a lot she does. So without further ado, let's get her on the line here. Desiree Mitchell, are you there?
Yes, I'm here. Thank you for that amazing intro. That was great.
not a problem at all. How's everything going?
Everything's good. How are you?
I'm doing great. And where are you at right now? Are you on the West Coast, East Coast?
Yes. Well, right now I'm on the West Coast, so I'm in Los Angeles. So, you know, we're pretty close to each other.
Relatively. I'm pretty sure you've been out here, though.
I actually have not been to Vegas. I know that's crazy, but I've never been to Vegas before. So I definitely have to make that trip. Like, I have to make that happen because I feel like I'm missing out, you know?
Yeah, I mean, the club scene out here is really, really good, obviously. And once in a while, the clubs will bring in some guest celebrities and put out some other music and all that to kind of get out to the fans, too. So that might be a little bit promotional thing for you if you get out here. So, yeah, definitely, well worth the trip. But, you know, being a local, I'm always off-strip usually, so that's just me. But you've been really, really busy as of late, obviously, with the new music video out and the new single out as well. I mean, how's been the reaction so far?
Oh, yeah. I mean, my music video for I Need That is out right now. I've been getting really good feedback. I'm really happy about it. It hit 100,000 views on YouTube in, like, less than a week. So that was pretty cool because this is, like, you know, kind of I was trying something for the first time. I'm like, you know what, let me put this music video out. This is, like, the first music video in a long time, you know. So I was happy to see that there's a lot of great feedback, and I have another song coming out, like, next month. So I'm happy about that as well. So I can't wait. And it'll be another music video, so we'll see how that one does.
How was it for you to do a music video for the first time? I mean, you know, was the concept yours or somebody else's? And what was it like just being on the set to be able to do a music video?
So the concept was my concept. I know we'll get into it later, but, you know, I wrote a TV show. So I'm very hands-on with writing and directing and just being a creator. So it's very important to me that even in my music, even in just everything I do, I have a hand in it creatively. So, it was like I wrote the treatment for the video. I knew what I wanted. I knew how I wanted it. And I had a great team around me to just make it happen and make, you know, the vision come to life. So I was excited about that.
What came first to you, the music or acting? What was the first thing that kind of caught your fancy when you were younger?
Well, I've been doing music since like a little girl, like 4. You know, I was like always singing and doing vocal lessons and all of that. So I would definitely say that music came first. And then around the time I was like 10, 11, that's when I jumped into like the TV film acting world, and I really fell in love with it as well. So a lot of times I get asked, oh, which one do you like more? But for me, it really goes hand in hand, and it's just me being an entertainer. So I just feel like I can do it all. You know, why just do one thing?
Both have their different challenges, obviously. You know, it's kind of almost, I would say, comparing apples to oranges, as it were. But, I mean, obviously, performing, you get that immediate kind of satisfaction, you know, in getting the crowd versus probably watching an audience, you know, after you've seen, you know, they've seen like an episode of your show and get the reaction that way too. So there is a kind of a difference in terms of the satisfaction right away versus maybe a little bit delayed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. I feel like in the music industry, I guess until you like get signed to a major label, it is like a self thing. Everything is like you put it out yourself. Everything is kind of like a self project versus, of course, you know, you're still self-employed, but you go on audition and then you're on set. And then it's kind of like just in their hands. All you have to do is worry about being on set and doing the acting job. But with music, I feel like it's much more legwork in the music industry, but definitely each one has their own struggles and their own hard things about them because, you know, I've struggled in both areas for sure. And I appreciate both crafts equally. So, yeah.
Now, where are you originally from? Are you originally from L.A.?
No, so I'm from Miami, Florida. So I'm very Southern, and I was born and raised in Miami. I was there until I was 18. So I moved to Los Angeles when I was 18 years old. I kind of just knew that I wanted to move to L.A. You know, like, it was always a thing for me. Like, yeah, I'm going to move to L.A. one day because I knew what I was doing from a very young age. I knew the career path that I chose. So, I've been here for – I'm 20. I'm about to be 21 in August. So almost 3 years, you know, going on 3 years now.
Well, I mean, that's cool because, I mean, when you turn 21, it's going to be a lot more enjoyable experience coming out here to Vegas then.
Right, so. Yeah, that's – Yeah, honestly, I've been kind of waiting to be 21, you know? Like, you know what? Like, why go before 21?
How is the acting jobs out there in Miami? I know Atlanta's right now a huge hotbed of acting outside of Los Angeles right now, but, you know, how was it for you to get acting jobs out in Miami, or were you, were you getting any acting jobs at all?
Yeah, so in Miami, it's very far and few between. So I signed to my first acting agency in Miami when I was 11. And then, like, I was working as much as I could. You know, I definitely felt like I had exhausted all of my opportunities in Miami, which is why, like, you know, I ended up moving at 18. But, yeah, it's just kind of like in Miami – you know, yes, you can sign to an agency and you can do everything right, but it's still not as much work, obviously, as L.A. And, like, I kind of just had to, you know, if something happened to be shooting in Miami, like, whoa, that's, like, a big deal, you know? So it was definitely a struggle for me just trying to build my resume and stuff like that because it's just not a lot of work in the TV film world. Music is it's kind of great in Miami, but – Yeah, in the TV film world, it's just not the same, you know?
Yeah, I mean, how many instruments do you play, actually?
I play the piano, and I want to learn guitar. So my engineer that I work with out here, you know, that records me, he is a great guitar player. Like, I want to learn from him. So I feel like the more instruments you play, you get better. Your voice gets better. You just become way more musically inclined. So my instrument use right now is pretty basic, but I definitely want to expand on that for sure.
Yeah, and you can get the kind of the bigger picture of what you want in terms of a songwriter, you know. I mean, if you have a basic tune down, but, you know, you add in those drums, you add in those that bass, and, you know, it kind of fills up the sound a little bit more, you know. So I know how that is.
Yes,
with
for sure.
The musicians I've talked to over the past year. Yeah, I mean, you know, it's great to be able to have that capability as well. When you write music, I mean, do you find it usually that the tune comes first, the lyrics come first, or is it a little bit about 50-50?
Well, for me, I work with producers, so usually I already have the beat, you know, like I have the actual instrumental, if you want to call it, to the song. So then I'll start doing melodies. Usually, I personally will start to think of melodies first, and then I'll write. But most of the time, I already have in my head what I want to talk about, because I'm an R&B singer, so, like, usually I'm talking about love or a particular situation. So, like, however I'm feeling that night, usually I'm in the studio at night, but however I'm feeling that night, I know, okay, this is the kind of song I want to make, so let me write, you know, about that topic. So, yeah, I kind of just already know what I want to talk about, and then I just put it together and make it a song format.
Did you learn a lot when you first came into the studio? I mean, you know, obviously performing behind the mic is one thing, but, you know, kind of being at the board and seeing what engineers and producers do in terms of what their jobs are, did you learn a lot about that?
Yeah, so, like, the first professional song that I ever recorded, I believe I was, like, 10 years old, and it was definitely a learning experience, just being that young and seeing the process of it all, and knowing, because, you know, as a little girl, I love Beyonce, and I love, you know, all of these amazing artists, so I'm just seeing the glitz and glamour of when they perform or when their song is on the radio, but to really be in the studio, especially that young, and to see, like, okay, no, this is a lot of work, you know, so yeah, it's very inspiring as well to see everyone's different jobs come together, and then it makes the magic of a hit song. So, yeah, for sure.
Yeah. Now, with that in mind, I mean, do you prefer, you know, more of an intimate crowd to do a lot of your pieces, or would you like a little bit bigger crowd in terms of it? You know, maybe an intimate club setting versus maybe a more raucous, you know, bigger party kind of setting.
Well, you know, I haven't gotten a huge crowd yet, because, you know, I'm going to now start performing and doing my current music. So I haven't even gotten a chance to experience like a huge stadium or, you know, something of that magnitude. So I have only really done kind of like intimate crowds, and I think it's really dope. And I think that you can definitely connect more. You can see people's faces in the audience. But I feel like I would also really love huge crowds as well, so I'm excited to experience that.
Yeah, I mean, obviously this sounds like you guys may be doing at least a little touring, you know, even just in the area coming up. I mean, is that something that you're expecting to do later this year?
Yeah, for sure. I'm, you know, coming out with an EP in a couple of months, so like I'm definitely going to be pushing the EP and the singles, just every radio station. I want to be at every radio station promoting, and I definitely want to tour for sure. I mean, performing live, there's really nothing like it. It's nothing like that feeling of performing live. And, you know, like I said, I'm open to intimate audiences. I'm open to huge audiences. I think it's an honor to be in front of a huge audience, you know, so yeah, I'm kind of just excited to experience that and excited to start the whole performing thing as it relates to this project.
Was there any artist that you grew up on that you particularly were fond of or kind of see as kind of, you know, influences when it comes to your music?
So it is cliche, but I definitely grew up on Beyonce. I have been a huge fan since like Destiny's Child, and I was always inspired by Beyonce because I think she's an amazing performer. Really, there's no performer like her. And her artistry in itself is so unique, and she's such a trendsetter in the music industry. So she definitely has influenced my sounds. I also love Drake. I think Drake is someone that's really unique and has a heavy influence in the music industry. I'm also a fan of, like, oldies music. So I love 90s R&B. I love 80s R&B. I love Aaliyah. I love a lot of, like, just old songs that people my age probably shouldn't even know. But I just love I love old music because I feel like it was more raw. It was more vocals involved. It was more you know, kind of like talent involved back then, because you didn't really have all the things that you could do your voice in the studio. You just kind of raw, and you're just singing, you know? So yeah, I love that.
I know Toni Braxton does a residency out here. So I know you would probably enjoy seeing her if you end up coming out here, but mm-hmm. Yeah, you kind of make me feel a little bit old because you're saying this is old music, 80s and 90s. I have the stuff that I grew up on, so...
right.
But yeah,
you know, like for me, since I'm 20, a lot of my peers aren't really fond to 80s music, or, you know, so it's kind of like I feel like, wow, I'm definitely, you know, different.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you know, have you had the opportunity to see Drake or Beyonce live in concert at all?
Yes, I did. It was amazing. I've actually seen Drake and Beyonce live. And, you know, Beyonce is, I guess, more comparable to me in a sense that she's a woman. She's a black woman. She's a singer and all of that. So it's definitely when I watch Beyonce, not only is it an amazing experience that I feel like everyone should experience, but I feel like, you know, it's more so like I can look at her and feel like, oh, I can do that too. Versus Drake, I mean, you know, he is a male, he is a rapper, but I still feel like his sound is so unique and has heavily influenced R&B singers that to come after him, rappers to come after him. I just feel like, you know, like I said, he is a trendsetter, so even him performing live is still like a rush of, I feel like he's a great performer as well. You know, it's just obviously a different kind of performer than Beyonce, but it's still really high energy. And I appreciate that because a lot of rappers don't bring it to the stage, you know, but I feel like Drake does.
Yeah, no, let's turn over to your acting and Loyalty. I mean, how did that project come about?
Yeah, so Loyalty is a show that I wrote, and I started writing that about 2 years ago, maybe 2.5 years ago. So, you know, first it was really a small idea. It was just like, you know what, because I'm a content creator. So, you know, easily I could think of something to post on Instagram or something to post on YouTube. So at first Loyalty was like a small idea, like, maybe it could be a YouTube series. Maybe it could be an Instagram series. Maybe it could be 10-minute episodes. So it kind of just started to grow and grow and grow because the story is so, I feel like the story is so unique and it requires, like, it requires it to be a full show. So before I knew it was like hour-long episodes, you know. And then I kind of just wanted to get it to perfection on the script before I filmed it or brought it to actual production. And then, you know, I got an amazing team. We all really pulled it off, and it was a great experience.
Yeah, I mean, how was it for you to go through the casting process? And tell me a little bit about working with the actors.
Yeah, so it's crazy because this is the first project that I've been behind. You know, usually I'm an actress and I just go to the auditions and then, you know, I either get it or I don't. And then if I get it, I'm just on set or, you know, so it's like usually I just have one job. But with Loyalty, I wear many hats. You know, I directed, I casted, I wrote it. So the casting process itself was really inspiring just to see from the other end of the spectrum, like, oh, wow, these actors are really coming in and they are killing it. So it was kind of even hard to cast. And then I realized, wow, so I don't know, it kind of just made me feel like as an actress moving forward, not to be so hard on myself or be so in my head or nervous when it comes to a casting, because it's like, it's just a casting, you know? So it kind of made me feel, it kind of eased my mind a little bit as it relates to me auditioning in the future. And also the actors that I ended up choosing, like my cast is amazing. Everybody brought it. Everybody made me as a writer and director even more inspired. Like, you know, I know what I wrote, but like they brought it to a different level. So I see what it's like in as like in the director's shoes, and like working with amazing actors is so inspiring. It really is.
Yeah, I mean, and just the experience of doing directing, obviously, you know, you kind of get a different perspective in terms of that as well. And, you know, obviously you're kind of, you know, getting from some of the acting experiences as well. So it must have been a good challenge for you to be a director.
Oh, yeah, it is, because, you know, as a director, you want the best product that you can make. You want the production, you want the show, you just want it to be the best thing that it could be. And, you know, as a director, you're kind of like the person that has to say so. So it is kind of like, you know, on set, making sure, did we really get the shot? Like, I don't know, it's just a lot to think about as a director. You do, that is the biggest hat to wear on set. So it is a lot of pressure, but, you know, like I said, when you're working with amazing actors, they make your job so much more easier. And, you know, I'm also starring in the show, so I definitely wore a lot of hats. And for my scenes that I was actually in, I had a co-director, and he was really amazing. So I definitely, we had a great team.
And probably what was the most challenging part of taking the director's position?
Making the right choices, or like making sure that you're making the right choices. So even like when it comes to the casting process, making sure like it has to be the right choice, what actor you choose. And the way you give these actors direction on set, like it has to be just the right choice. Like I said, that's the biggest hat to wear. So when you're doing a scene, if it's a super sad scene, you got to make sure you're giving the actors the right direction and making the right choice as a director, since it's up to you to really pull this scene off the best it can be. So I don't know. It's kind of like you just want to, I was watching like a lot of shows that I love too, and kind of seeing, and watching directors' interviews and stuff, and seeing like how they make their choices and, you know, how they do things. So it is just like a lot of pressure of, dang, I just want this to be great because I'm the director. So this really, this depends on me, you know? So yeah, I mean, I don't know. It's just making sure that you're making the right choices with everything that you tell the actors to do, with even the actors that you choose. So, yeah, that's, you know, that's pretty much what's tough about it.
Oh, even with that, I mean, just having a cast and to be able to direct a TV series, that means that they get used to you and you get used to them. So there's definitely a better communication once you get the first couple episodes in the can that, you
right.
know, what expected. So it's very interesting. It's a very interesting situation in terms of this as well. I mean, what's been
yes,
the reaction
definitely.
To the series?
Well, right now we're in post-production, so we're getting it edited. The only people that have seen it so far are like the people involved in the project. Not even the actors have seen it. So just like the people involved in the crew, I would say. And we're getting it together, and it's really good. And, you know, we're really excited. And I actually did post a behind-the-scenes vlog on YouTube, and a lot of people were even loving the behind-the-scenes, like, oh, my God, this looks so good. So they're definitely going to love when the actual show comes out. And I'm excited about it. We want to do a screening in maybe August for the cast and crew, and then after that we will figure out what we're going to do with the show as far as distribution and who we want to partner with to distribute the show. I really want to do Netflix. Netflix is definitely on my radar. The show is really gritty, and I want to do a platform that will allow me to keep my creative control and, you know, just a very creator friendly kind of platform. And Netflix is very creator friendly. So we'll see.
Yeah. I mean, it must've been kind of thrilling for you to just to see the dailies, you know, on, throughout this whole process. And, you know, obviously you said you're a post-production, so you're obviously, you know, looking at rough cuts of the series and all that as well. So
mm-hmm.
it must be a part of it must be thrilling and part of it must be a little bit, you know, like, well, you know, maybe I could have done this better, or maybe I could have done this a little bit better. And then the editors can go back and take a look at that as well. So, yeah, mm-hmm. it must be an interesting process for you.
Oh, yeah, it's definitely post-production, I feel like, is the most intense part of any production, because this is the part where even if you did make mistakes on set, you can kind of fix this in post-production. So it's kind of the part of the production where you can fix your mistakes, and you really just, you know, post-production and the way that something is edited, even if it's an amazing script, if it's an amazing cast, the way it's edited is really important. Like, it could be edited not well, and then it's not as good as it could have been. So, you know, you definitely want to make sure you get great editors, you get editors that you have great chemistry with and that understand your vision. And, yeah, post-production is really intense. It's like your last chance, you know. That's how I feel. Like, it's just my last chance to make this great.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that's great. So we hopefully get to look through that next year, maybe getting distributed somewhere, hopefully Netflix. So it'll be interesting. I don't know if you're going to bring it into any festivals or anything like that too, but it might be an option. But, you know, I think it's great to be able to see this as well. I mean, it's a huge undertaking to be able to create your own show if you don't if you don't have a network behind you in terms of that, you know,
right.
You know, Netflix, you know, didn't front you the money at all for this project.
Right.
So it'll be interesting to see how this kind of goes. Before we leave, I got to talk about, Scoliosis Warriors that you're a part of, and you have suffered from scoliosis as well. Tell me a little bit about you know, the organization and what you've been doing as an advocate for that organization.
Yes. So scoliosis, I was diagnosed with scoliosis when I was like 11, and I ended up getting spinal fusion surgery to correct it. So as we stand right now, yes, my back is straight, but I do have a rod in my back because scoliosis, there's no cure for it. So the only way to kind of correct it is to have a rod in your back, so it can stay straight, you know. So my job, I feel, as with the platforms that I have, I feel like it's really to educate people on scoliosis, because a lot of people don't really understand it. And, you know, that's okay. I feel like that's what I'm here for. And when I was 16 to 17, I did a lot of pageants. I was doing pageants in South Florida. So, you know, I had this platform to really speak about certain things. And about a year prior to starting pageants, that's when I started my support group / organization. You know, I wanted to evolve into like a full blown charity. Definitely, that is my next step. But for now, I've done charity work. You know, I've done a few things, and my goal really is to not only educate people on scoliosis, but to help people pay for their surgeries. The surgery is not cheap. It's like an $100,000 surgery. You know, I was lucky enough to have insurance that covered it, but not everyone does. Everyone has different situations, you know, so I definitely want to be that person. And once my organization turns into a full-blown charity, I want to be able to definitely just pay for people's surgeries and pay for people's physical therapy or whatever it is that they need, you know, as it relates to scoliosis. So for me, I feel like it's a disease that people don't talk about a lot, you know? So yeah, I want to be that person. And I feel like it's really dope that I went through that. You know, it was something hard, especially that young, but I'm happy. It definitely, you know, made me who I am today. And I am, you know, I'm not ashamed of it. It's something that I want to talk about. So yeah. And what's crazy is when I first like started kind of my organization, I put it on social media. I have an Instagram for it, which is Scoli Warriors, but I did not know how many people had it. I mean, I guess I knew people had it, but it's crazy when people come together, and like, I was so surprised at the feedback of like, oh my God, this is happening to me, or even parents coming to me like, oh my God, my daughter or my son, you know. So it's just crazy. Like, I didn't expect that.
Yeah, you know, it was, I think, you know, back in my day, back when I was growing up, that was something that they checked very, you know, a lot, you know, to see if somebody had scoliosis. Whenever you went through an examination of some sort, you know, that one of the things they do is they check to see if your back is straight and to make sure that that wasn't going to be the situation. So yeah, I mean, it's, I think, yeah, it does get kind of, you know, put under the radar as of late, because there's so many other horrendous diseases that are out there, but it's still important. I mean, you know, especially, and I think the science is starting to catch up now too, in terms of you know, what we can possibly do as well. So it'll be interesting to see what kind of new technologies we get, and maybe we can cut down that you know, $100,000 bill down to a minimal amount of bill. You know, there's always certain technologies that are out there as well. So that'll be interesting,
for sure.
To see, you know, to see how everything by that.
Yeah, I feel like, sorry, I feel like as we go on and, you know, we get further in science and technology, I do feel like we'll get further as it relates to scoliosis. For me, I just feel like, you know, even if you get checked in school, it's just not enough. People don't talk about it enough, because I actually did get checked in seventh grade. And that was when it was actually sixth grade. And I had already, like, had my surgery planned and stuff, but I couldn't opt out of that test. Like, I still had to do it. But I remember being, like, the only person or me and one other person in my grade having it. And mine was severe and theirs were really mild, you know. So it was still, like, it was such a huge ratio, you know. So a lot of people just didn't get it. And for the people that do end up getting diagnosed with scoliosis, especially when it's severe, you know, it can be fatal. It can be, over the time, you know, crush your organs and you know, cause breathing problems. And just, there's so many problems that can come from it. You know, I feel like people don't understand that it is, when severe enough, it's a very serious thing, you know. So I want to be that person to educate people on that, for sure.
And the world is getting a lot smaller in terms of the fact that people can communicate now, and there's opportunities to see what, you know, what's going on in other countries. Scoliosis doesn't just happen in the United States; it happens worldwide.
Mm-hmm.
So we're seeing, you know, we're seeing more people kind of raise their hands in other countries, saying, "Yeah, this is something that's what's going on with me." I'm pretty sure, you know, you may be getting a couple people from the outside the United States, so, you know, in other countries, you know, contacting you.
Yeah, it's all over. It's just it's definitely not a U.S. thing. It's just a human thing, you know. So everyone, everywhere is affected by this. And a lot of times, since scoliosis is not that talked about, people don't know what to do. It's like, oh my God, wait, what do I do? It's just a kind of thing that people sometimes ignore because they don't think it's a big deal or they don't know what to do. It's just, you know, a lot of people are just uneducated on it, you know. So I just want to be that person that lets people, or yeah, that educates people on it, that talks about it, that helps people get through it, that has this charity. Like, I want my charity to be huge, you know. Like, I want it to be just as big as any other disease out there with their huge charities, you know. I feel like scoliosis deserves that. And, you know, I love all causes, you know. I love that we have things for every disease out there, but I definitely feel like this is a cause that particularly affects me. So it's something that I feel very strongly about, since it really, you know, actually affects me.
Yeah. I mean, it's you have a lot on your plate. So this kind of run down everything right now. We're waiting on loyalty. Your new single and video are dropping next month. That's going down as well. Is there any other projects coming out? Any acting projects that you're doing, you know, that'll be coming out soon?
Yeah. That's funny, because on July 13th, I believe, there will be a new app out called the Zeus app. And, my friends, King Batch, Dave Storm, Amanda Cerny, they are huge influencers. They do comedy, and they do their content creators on social media, and they're coming out with an app called the Zeus app. So it'll be a new streaming service app, kind of like Netflix, but on your phone. And there will be a lot of originals on there, and I'm in one of the originals. It's a show called Bad Escorts. It's a really, really, really funny show. And, yeah, I'm excited because this is, like, a new thing that's coming out, like a phone thing, you know, because everyone's always on their phone 24/7. So for an app to come out with, like, original TV shows and stuff like that, it's going to be really, really, really dope. So I'm excited about that. That's going to be July 13th, if I'm not mistaken. Yes, I believe that the app comes out then. It's a monthly subscription. It's $3.99 a month. So it's actually cheaper than the other, you know, streaming services. And, yeah, so I'll be in a show called Bad Escorts. And it's a really dope comedy. And, you know, I'm not a comedian, but I can be funny with direction. So I was, like, just around a bunch of amazing comedians on set. And my character is pretty funny. So it's very much different from Loyalty in a sense. Loyalty is an extreme drama. And that's usually what I'm really good at. But I was definitely able to step out of my shell and be funny for once. So I'm excited about that. And, yeah, so that's something that's coming out very soon. And, yeah, so everyone can download the app.
Yeah, I mean, you know, yeah, comedy is always a little bit harder to do than drama because you have mm-hmm. to have that timing. So it has its challenges. So.
No, yeah, I feel like comedy is so hard. Like, I really feel like comedians are the most talented people ever because – you know, even when I go to, like, stand-up comedy shows, I could never, like, I just don't, that's some talent, you know, to be funny. I feel like being funny is really a talent. So, you know, of course, you know, when you're doing a scripted show, you can be funny with direction and, like, you know, extreme coaching. And that's kind of what I had to do. Like, I had to really take the direction of these other comedians that I was around on set. And I definitely got it done. Like, I'm proud of myself. But they have, like, just a raw talent to be funny. Like, they're just witty. They could just be funny if you just say, hey, be funny right now. They can just do it, you know. That is talent to me.
Yeah, you know, yeah, it's great to be able to see. We'll hopefully get to be able to see your comic chops coming up in July as well. You know, official Desiree on pretty much all the social media platforms, correct?
Yes, so Official Desiree is my Twitter, my Instagram, and also my website is officialdesiree.com. You can check that out and all of my updates and kind of just find me on all things. And, yeah, my Facebook is The Real Desiree because someone took Official Desiree. I was so mad. But everything pretty much is Official Desiree, and you'll be able to find my Facebook through my website and, you know, my other social media platforms. But, yeah.
Yeah, you can check out when a bunch of these projects drop. Obviously, the new single and the, you know, and where to purchase mm-hmm. the new single and the single that's out right now. I Need That. You guys can check out where you can buy that as well as watch the video as well. So, mm-hmm. I believe that's everything we needed to cover. Like I said, you're a very busy person.
Thank you so much for having me. Thank
oh,
you.
Not a problem at all, and definitely we'll have to get you back on a little bit later. Hopefully, when we find a place for Loyalty, maybe we'll get a mm-hmm. kind of an announcement from you on that as well. So, you know, best of luck to you. You know, me. Hopefully, after your birthday, you can make it up here to celebrate. So,
yes,
you know,
hopefully, yes.
Yeah. Again, yeah. Just thank you for being on the show, and we'll talk to you soon.
Thank you. Have a good day. Thank you for having me.
No problem. Official Desiree, that's D-E-S-I-R-E-E, for all the social media and her website. So make sure you guys check her out. Really talented actress, really talented singer. It'll be interesting to see what kind of goes on in the next year. It's been kind of crazy. We only have a few minutes left. I'm going to mention that no show next week. We're taking a week off. I'm going to be on the road. Speaking of which, I think a week from Sunday we're going to be doing a special episode. It'll be a Sunday night. Several years ago, I would say about 7 or 8 years ago, I did a show on a train. And we were probably, I like to say that we were one of the first podcasts ever to do so. And I'd love to do that experiment once again. So we're going to try to book another guest for a Sunday night, special Sunday night show. And it'll be a little bit better since I won't be having any mountains in between where I'm going to where I'm coming from. I'm going to be in Phoenix heading towards L.A. So I'll be on a train. So hopefully we'll have a nice little late night show with one guest, hopefully. And we'll be talking to that person. So that'll be a week from Sunday. I'll have an official time and an official guest, hopefully sometime in the next week or so. But I just wanted to do a train show once again. So make sure you guys check that out. At SWIV, somewhere in Vegas on Facebook. And then you guys can check, download the show on Amazon, on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, wherever you guys get your podcasts. You can even ask Alexa if you want to listen to this podcast. So make sure you guys check that out as well. With that in mind, we'll see you in a couple weeks. Like I said, well, a week from Sunday, more than likely we'll have a show on aboard a train for the second time in the show history. So with that in mind, we thank you for joining us, and we'll talk to you guys in a few weeks.